طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone.
Yeah.
And welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and a discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian voice, the Palestinian narrative, from a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. And that is why it is so important that we present it each week on This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts. Truth used to be somewhat of an antiseptic against lies and fraud, and a potent tool in the struggle for human rights. The search for truth is at the heart of responsible journalism. Expose falsehoods by revealing the truth, and bend the arc of justice. That is the hope. But the culture of lies and deceit runs so deep in our society that truth is losing its cleansing qualities, and if lying suits the narrative to move your agenda, that is just fine, both in American society's Trumpism and Israel's historical narrative. Example: Israel to this day officially claims it does not have nuclear weapons. And now Israel claims that despite the fact that they have infiltrated six of Palestine's human rights organizations with sophisticated surveillance equipment, and therefore know exactly what is going on within these agencies, Israel is claiming that they are terrorist organizations. But the evidence they offer to substantiate their claim is bogus and has been discredited in both Europe and the United States. Today we dissect the attack on one of those major Palestinian human rights organizations, Al-Haq. Our featured speaker is attorney Susan Power, who is the legal advocacy director at Al-Haq. Here she is speaking with the Palestine Center's Saeed Erekat in Washington, D.C.
Well, thank you, Omar. Thank you very much, Dr. Susan Power, for being with us. We really have looked forward to hear your point of view on this, especially on this auspicious occasion, today being the International Day of Solidarity with the Palestinian people. And this is definitely a time when the Palestinians need solidarity, and they need the world to stand with them and to stand on their side in their struggle for justice and equality. Dr. Susan, without further ado, we would like you to make your presentation, then I will be asking you some questions, and then we will open it to the audience, the participating audience. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for hosting me today. And I'm here representing Al-Haq. And Al-Haq has recently been one of six organizations which Israel has designated as terror organizations under its counterterrorism law of 2016 and as an unlawful organization under military order. So the other organizations that have this designation include Adamir Prisoner Support and Human Rights Association, Bazan Center for Research and Development, the Defense for Children International Palestine, the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees. So just to note, these our organizations are the longest established organizations in Palestine. So Al-Haq, for example, was established in 1979. We've been working in the occupied territory for over 42 years. And it's the same with the other organizations, like Bazan Center for Research and Development was established in 1989, has 32 years experience. And the Union of Agricultural Workers Committees since 1986. So together and collectively, our organizations have a collective total of 210 years working on the occupied Palestinian territory. So we've been around, you know, a long time. And it's only now that Israel is seeing our organizations as such a threat that it wants to dismantle and completely eliminate our presence in the occupied territory. So it's targeted us to prevent our work and to effectively silence us. I'll speak about the work of Al-Haq and what we do. So as I said earlier, we were established in 1979, and our mandate is, it's a human rights and international humanitarian law mandate, and we work on monitoring and documenting violations of human rights law and humanitarian law in the occupied Palestinian territory, regardless of the perpetrator of the violation. And our work has led us to really significant international recognition. So since 1979, we've been the recipient of 11 international awards for our international human rights work. So like some of these include like the very prestigious Guzan Penning Prize for Human Rights. So this was awarded in 2010. In 2018, we were awarded the Human Rights Prize of the French Republic. In 2019, we were awarded the Human Rights and Business Award at the UN in Geneva. And in 2020, we were awarded the Gwen Skinner Human Rights Award for Corporate Accountability in the United States. So our work has been very widely recognized over the last number of years. I will say, I just want to highlight two events which preceded the designation orders, and which I think are both quite important. So the first being the infiltration of a number of our phones with Pegasus spyware going back as far as July 2020. But we had actually discovered this just a number of days before the designation orders. So it transpired that one of our staff members in Al-Haq, one of our field researchers, his phone had been infected with Pegasus spyware. And then out of the other six organizations, there was also another five persons who had their phones infected with Pegasus spyware as well. So this is a very high level surveillance operation on our organizations. And we were just before the designation orders were issued, we were about to publicize and have a massive campaign of publicity showcasing what had happened in relation to this Pegasus spyware. So Pegasus spyware is marketed by the Israeli NSO group, which is a notorious group, which there's a number of court cases against at the moment. The forensic investigation was reviewed by Citizen Lab and also by Amnesty International Security Lab. And they looked at a number of phones across the organizations. I think it's also important to note that a few days later, the same tests were also done on the phones from the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and their team who were working on the International Criminal Court, their phones had also been hijacked and surveilled with the Pegasus spyware. So again, this is very high level surveillance. And although we can only connect this back to Pegasus spyware, it should be noted that the costs involved in this are quite substantial. So this would have cost someone somewhere over $500,000 to infect the phones with the Pegasus spyware. So our understanding was that this is possibly connected back to Israel. The other kind of key event which preceded the designation of our organizations has been this really historic year of development at the International Criminal Court. So we've had a real game changer of a year. So like Al-Haq, for example, we've been involved. We're really pushing for prosecutions at the International Criminal Court way back as far as 2009, very early on with the first prosecutor. And there we were arguing around issues of Palestinian statehood in Palestine. At the time, it would hinge upon issues of recognition. And we continued our work after 2015, when the state of Palestine then kind of was formally acceded to the Rome Statute. But since this time, like, and over the number of years, we've been pushing with communications and we've been pushing for the opening of an investigation. And this year has been a really key year for the International Criminal Court. So we've seen a massive movement on the files. So in February 2021, this year, the pretrial chamber ruled on the territorial jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court to try cases in the occupied Palestinian territory, and that being the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip, in the situation of the state of Palestine. Then a month later, in March 2021, we had the investigation opening, which was a massive and significant turning point in the lifespan of our work before the International Criminal Court. And another key event then happened a month later. In April, the Biden administration rescinded Executive Order 13928. And this executive order had really been a protective order both for the United States and for Israel. So this order had put Prosecutor Bensouda on the sanctions list, and it had also sanctioned the head of jurisdiction and complementarity, and was also designed to, and intended to target organizations, lawyers, and individuals who were materially assisting the court in terms of the US, but also the allies of the US. So we expected this was going to have a massive chilling effect on our organization and on Palestinian organizations cooperating with the court. But in April, the Biden administration rescinded this executive order, and this removed a cloak of protection for Israel. And this was a very significant moment. And then in September, we had a change of prosecutor. So the old prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, her term of office changed, and we had a new incoming prosecutor. And in September, we were unsure about where we would stand with the situation in Palestine and with this case file, with the new prosecutor coming in. And then in October, last month, it became clear that Karim Khan and the prosecutor's office were taking up the case file again. The investigation team was mobilized, and things were happening in relation to the International Criminal Court. So I think against this backdrop, it's important to see what we're looking at in terms of these designations. So for Israel has targeted our organization and the other five organizations under its counterterrorism law of 2016. So just in relation to this law, there's two parts of this law where you can have a designation of an organization. So one is for an actual organization who is actually committing a violent act, so kind of very traditional acts of terrorism. But there's also a second part to this counterterrorism law, which provides for organizations who are seen to assist the terror organizations to designate them also as terror organizations. Now, this second part, this second clause is very problematic. And Israel had been for about 10 years developing this counterterrorism law. There had been four committee hearings around this law. And even at that time, it transpired that this particular provision gave sweeping powers to the Minister of Defense to basically allocate any organization and designate any organization potentially as a terror organization. And it gives massive deference to the Minister of Defense. And this provision in and of itself, we would find that under a normal application of law, that this provision is disproportionate to the legitimate military aim being pursued, and it can be very much subject to abuse. So we've been designated on the 19th of October, just gone, under this very problematic counterterrorism law as a terrorist organization. And the order itself was very open-ended, so in relation to our organization. So we were designated under Designation Order 373. And this basically tarnished us for our very legitimate human rights work. And it's very plain to see under the Designation Order. So the Designation Order itself states that the declared Al-Haq activity is in the field of human rights protection. And then they say, however, in practice, it's engaged on behalf of the Popular Front in the promotion of steps against Israel in the international arena. So it's basically linking our very legitimate human rights work and our human rights work, which is to promote the realization of the right of self-determination for the Palestinian people as a whole. It's linking our objectives as a human rights organization to the mandate of the Popular Front. And it's making these very kind of spurious and unconnected and unsubstantiated links to an alleged terror organization. And then under the counterterrorism law, under Article 3A, the Minister of Defense of Israel has, with absolutely no publicized facts and no substantiated information, has basically categorized us and the other organizations as terror organizations. And we can go back to May 2021 to have some sort of inkling as to what the basis is and what the file is that Israel is using to tarnish and to target our organizations. So back in May 2021, there was a turn of events that kind of passed us by. Like, we saw it flash up in the newspapers that Israel had been approaching member states in the European Union and various member states to try and stop the funding going to Palestinian human rights organizations. And we did see this pop up in the background and had some knowledge of it happening, but we were so distracted with our work and focused on our work in May at that time, when we had the hostilities in Gaza, where we had very significant death toll of 254 Palestinians killed in Israel's military offensive. And in the West Bank then, we had another over 40 people killed right across the West Bank as well. So we were engaged in this rapid fire response with our human rights work. So it kind of passed us by a bit that there was this, that Israel was bringing this 74-page document of evidence at that time to the various European Union states. But it transpired that this 74-page document of evidence, and we believe that this is potentially the same document that the Israeli Minister of Defense has designated our organizations on the basis of. And this 74-page document of evidence has been completely discredited by the European Union member states who have seen it. So, for example, the Irish Minister of Foreign Affairs said that the allegations had not been substantiated. And even more recently, the EU representative for Foreign Affairs, Joseph Borrell, said that the EU had still not received any convincing evidence. And it has since transpired that the material in the 74-page file has been gathered from people who were put under interrogation and who were tortured during the interrogation. And the information in the file is basically information obtained under people who were tortured in violation of international law and the principles on torture. But it's also transpired, and it's become very clear to us that what Israel is targeting with this with these terror designations, Israel is targeting the funding of our organizations. So it's trying to cut off and basically stifle our funding so that we can't operate in the international legal order. And without our funding, it's very difficult for us to, it's very difficult for the organizations to continue and to exist. And just a few days after the terror designations, the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs published in a tweet that the Palestinian organizations allegedly had been forging documents and funneling aid money and providing jobs to terrorists. And then another thread read from the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs that there was alleged funds being collected and diverted for PFLP terrorist activities. So it seemed that the objective was to try and target the funding of our organizations. Now, we were initially confused by the designations under the counterterrorism law, as the counterterrorism law doesn't apply directly in the West Bank. It applies, of course, it does apply in East Jerusalem, of course, but as annexed territory. But we didn't know initially like why we had been designated under the counterterrorism law. And it was even a while, nearly another month, before we saw the designation as an unlawful organization under military order. But under the counterterrorism law, the Israeli Minister of Defense's very sweeping powers of administrative forfeiture or seizure. So the Israeli Minister of Defense can basically seize any property of an alleged terror organization, and these can be appropriated without civil or criminal court proceedings. So these are pretty excessive powers. And again, our understanding is that this type of forfeiture can be used for money and for financial flows coming into Israel and coming through Israel, and that there's no court process needed. And the Minister of Defense can just go and seize whatever assets that they require. So this is particularly problematic. And it wasn't then until the 3rd of November that we actually saw the designations as unlawful organizations under military order. And this then was on the basis of the emergency regulations, which are in effect in the occupied Palestinian territory. And it's just to note that these emergency regulations, these had actually been repealed at the end of the British mandate under the Palestine Revocations Order in Council of 1948. So these emergency regulations are not supposed to apply in the occupied territory. They are redundant. However, Israel has resurrected these old laws and uses them for punitive house demolitions and is now using them to designate our organizations as unlawful organizations. So what this effectively means is that our offices can be raided by the army. We can be subject to military prosecution. Our funds and salaries and property can be seized by the Israeli occupying forces. And this is all because of our very legitimate international human rights work. So Israel has, for the last number of years, been kind of cultivating ground to link our human rights work to acts of terrorism. And it even had a whole ministry whose object and purpose was to smear and delegitimize our organizations. So there was a number of reports which were published by the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs. So we had a report in 2018 and 2019 called Money Trail 1 and Money Trail 2, and then another one called Terrorists in Suits. And all of these posted very defamatory attacks on our organizations and people in our organizations. And then the recommendations were to EU and European states to hold the direct and indirect financial support, both of our organizations, the Palestinian organizations and other international human rights organizations that are working with us. And I think these particular reports are quite telling as to what Israel is actually doing. So Israel in these reports has characterized our work and what it calls so-called as terrorist tactics. So according to the Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs, that our organizations have employed rather bizarrely a range of terror tactics in the course of our work. And they quote in the reports that the NGOs, in their eyes, the path to mainstream acceptance requires adopting legitimate methods of action. And as a result, terrorist organizations have embraced a new approach at the basis of which is a waging of a campaign against Israel in the public opinion and legal arenas, which cynically and deliberately exploits human rights NGOs perceived in the West as legitimate. So this is, of course, completely bizarre to any right-thinking person. So Israel is basically equating normal, respected, legitimate human rights work, which countries in the West recognize as legitimate, as terrorist tactics. And this gives us some insight into what these terror designations actually are and how Israel has completely distorted the language of terrorism to attack civil society organizations. And it says that we are putting pressure on Israel with the aim of curtailing its defensive and economic freedom of action. These reports have singled out Al-Haq and other organizations as well, but I'll speak only for Al-Haq. So it's singled out the work of Al-Haq and the type of work that we do and the type of terror tactics apparently that Al-Haq is using is that Al-Haq is a member of the Palestinian Human Rights Organizations Council. It says that our organization promotes boycotts against the State of Israel and that we have taken action against Israel in the International Criminal Court and the United Nations Human Rights Council. So again, these sweeping terror claims are basically aimed at our very basic and legitimate human rights work. And even then, Al-Haq actually isn't a part of the global boycott movement. I would say we do recommend that corporations would conduct their enhanced due diligence assessments and that they would responsibly disengage from illegal settlement activities. And also we support people's right to boycott as a function of the freedom of expression. But we haven't actually joined the boycott call. But what we are seeing and what we have seen, especially since September 2015, when Al-Haq really ramped up its work with the International Criminal Court, and this was at a time, 2015 was a time when Al-Haq was starting to send huge communications of hundreds of pages long of evidence to the International Criminal Court. And what we've seen since 2015 is Israel has stepped up what I would call is its financial persecution of Al-Haq. So in September 2015, Al-Haq's European donors were sent forged letters. And these letters were claimed to come from the Palestinian Authority, claiming that our organization was under investigation by the international accounting firm Ernst & Young, and claiming that there were allegations of fraud and corruption. It transpired that both the Palestinian Authority and Ernst & Young never sent these letters. So these fraudulent letters were forged and sent by another entity. Then in the beginning of 2017, there were funds that were directed for Al-Haq were returned by a bank. And again, there were letters using the Palestinian Monetary Authority letterhead, which alleged that our organization did not qualify for the transfer of the funds. Again, it transpired that these were maliciously, this was a malicious fabrication, and the Palestinian Monetary Authority had never sent these letters. Then in July 2017, Irish officials reported back to us that while they were in, when they were in Ramallah, that Prime Minister Netanyahu had specifically mentioned that Al-Haq should not be funded by the Irish. And then in 2019, Israel's Ministry of Strategic Affairs claimed to have convinced banks right across Europe and the United States to close down the financial accounts of Al-Haq and other organizations. And again, these were spurious claims. They were related to our, they said they had closed down our MasterCard and our Visa card accounts, but we never had those credit card accounts. So Israel has been engaging and weaponizing and trying to mobilize against us and has been trying loads of different avenues of cutting down our funding and trying to target our funding right back for the last number of years. But why are we seeing this huge escalation now? So we've really progressed in terms of what we're seeing, the mechanisms that Israel is using. And we do see this terror designation as specifically linked to targeting our funding. And it's one step forward from the types of targeting that we've seen in the past. And again, this comes back to the work on the ICC. Like, we've had huge success at the ICC. We've moved from submitting six massive communications to the court. We had huge success with the amicus curiae. And now we're directly coordinating with the investigation team at the International Criminal Court. But what's really important as well for our organizations, like Israel prevents access from UN special rapporteurs. It prevents the access of fact-finding missions, and it will prevent the access of the investigation team of the ICC. It prevents their access into the occupied territory. So our role as civil society organizations is hugely important because we're coordinating and providing the international community with the requisite documentation of Israel's crimes. So we're giving them information on indiscriminate killings, on torture practices, on house demolitions, on property appropriations, and all the factual evidence that's required. And also, Israel has history of targeting our organization in particular because of our work on the International Criminal Court. So back in 2016, Israel, there was death threats against our general director, Shawan Jabarin. There was death threats against the head of our Europe office, Nadika Swanson, who was coordinating with the court. And this had reached such an elevated level that the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, in her annual report on preliminary examinations in 2016, highlighted that there had been threats and apparent acts of intimidation and interference, and that the situation was being taken very seriously by the Dutch authorities as the host state to the court. So we see these threats and as very real. You know, the threat that Israel can raid our offices under the terrorism law, the threat that Israel can possibly prosecute people under the terrorism law, the threat that Israel can try to appropriate our funding, all of these threats are very real. And even in recent weeks, we've seen Israel targeting a humanitarian organization in the occupied territory, the Health Workers Committee. And so far, there's been sham trials of the very respected director of that organization, Shatta Odeh, and also another very respected member of that organization, Joanna Rishmawi. Both of those women have been targeted by Israel. And also Israel has tried to link the plea bargain entered into by Joanna Rishmawi back to the designations of our six organizations. And this type of linking with a background chapter that Israel tried to submit to the military court for a completely unrelated case has been even dismissed by the military court itself as being unsound. So I'll just wrap up here just very quickly, as I know we're running out of time. But firstly, the type of international response that we've had has been huge. We've had a very strong response from EU member states, strong responses of support from Sweden, Belgium, and Ireland. And there's also been a number of motions and resolutions which we're seeing come before various countries as well. So there was a motion before the Dutch Parliament in support of our organisations. There's one being drafted by the Belgians. There was a UK early day motion. There's currently a parliamentary petition in Canada. And in the US, the US Congresswoman Betty McCollum advanced a bill against the designations of our six organizations. And we've also had huge support from the UN Special Rapporteurs as well. And I think what they said is particularly important to highlight, that this designation is a frontal attack on the Palestinian human rights movement and on human rights everywhere. That the silencing of their voices is not what a democracy adhering to well-accepted human rights and humanitarian standards would do. And we call upon the international community to defend the defenders. The misuse of counter-terrorism measures in this way by the government of Israel undermines the security of all. The freedoms of association and expression must be fully respected in order to enable civil society to perform its indispensable work. So what we're seeing now is having a bit of a chilling effect on our work. We're now in a position where we're waiting for the designation order has been issued, and now we're waiting for a potential appeal. So the 14 days under the military order for the appeal has already run out, and there's 60 days for an appeal under the counter-terrorism law. In recent days, Israel has designated our organizations, the six organizations, under the National Bureau for Counter-Terror Financing in Israel. So we expect now to see very soon when funds are coming through Israel and through the Israel banking system, that these will be appropriated under this designation that we've seen under the Financial Bureau of Terror Organizations. So this is particularly problematic. And our second problematic issue, which has just arisen in the last 24 hours, is the military commander has said that if we are to appeal if we are to progress with an appeal of the designations, that we have to immediately stop our work. So we've been given basically a warning that we have to immediately stop our human rights work. So we are now in a situation which is very grave. It's very urgent. And we are potentially seeing the impending closure of our organizations. So we're asking people to continue with their support, to continue supporting our organizations, to put pressure on their elected representatives, to call on the Israeli Minister of Defense to rescind the designations, and also to ensure the free flow of financial aid to our organizations as well. So I'll stop there because I know I might have run a little bit over time.
Thank you. That was a most compelling presentation, really informative. And, definitely in many ways, it's really quite dangerous for the work, the kind of work that you do and others do. Let me begin by asking you, a logistical question, if you will. A couple of weeks ago, the American ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas Greenfield was there, allegedly to meet with groups and so on. My question to you, did you meet with them? Were you asked to meet with her?
No, we weren't asked to meet with her. And our understanding was that she had been advised to not meet with the six organizations. Because of this, there was a statement which was signed onto by over 100 organizations right across Palestine who all refused to meet with her because of her stated position. For Al-Haq in particular, we were particularly worried, even outside of this, with her stance on normalization and the normalization agreements with regional countries.
Right. So because I asked that same question at the State Department, and apparently they met with some groups. I don't know who they met with, you know, but definitely none of the six organizations that were designated. This leads me to ask you about, you know, the claim that was made by the United States on the day, you know, this was announced, which was the 22nd of October, also in response to a question that I raised, they said that they have asked for clearances from Israel and that a group came by, and they never issued any explanation or what were the evidence. They said they asked for evidence, and up till now, the U.S. had not really either revealed the evidence or said that it was satisfactory and so on. What is your opinion? What, in your opinion, will the U.S., you know, pursue this issue further according to their own stated declaration more than a month ago?
Yeah, I think this is incredibly embarrassing for Israel. Israel has completely misread what's happening here, and it has been basically flying around the world and flying over to the US again with this shambolic and discredited 74-page document that it was showing around last May. And to our understanding, there's no extra evidence only than this very widely discredited and laughable document that Israel is showcasing. And it has been said it is completely unsubstantiated. And even for EU member states to come out with this very strong language against Israel, it shows the level of disrepute that this document stands in. And again, like, our organizations are the most prestigious organizations, the most long established organizations. Like, to tackle our organizations like this with terror designations, we're really, really trying to eliminate Palestinian civil society and all any semblance of any kind of democracy and any values for human rights and the rule of law. Our understanding is that there's been no extra evidence which has been presented, and the US, I think the US's silence is a silence of complete embarrassment. You know, that there's nothing else to say on the link.
We have some questions from the participants, but I wanted to ask you, as a legal expert, could that terror law, the Israeli terror law, could it be challenged in the courts? I mean, local courts, the Israeli courts. Could it be challenged if no evidence is produced?
Like, our understanding with that is that there's going to be no recourse for any type of justice under this law, because it's wide open to the deference of the Israeli Minister of Defense, and it's wide open to the legal proceedings themselves are open to secret evidence. So unless we had some sort of proceeding with due process and the right to see evidence and equality of arms, then there's absolutely no point to this process. Potentially you could see after the committee hearing, you could, and that appeal stage, you could appeal to the Israeli High Court of Justice. But again, that deference back to the security of the state, and that deference back, like we've seen in all the different cases all over the years, I mean, we wouldn't even hold out for any kind of justice under this law. And even the courts themselves, these are the long arms of the colonial power. We stopped engaging with them years ago because we see them as the architecture. These are part of the architecture of apartheid. There's no justice to be had from engaging the Israeli court system.
I also wanted to ask, because they put you in a sort of catch-22 situation with the appeal. You know, in order to work, you have to appeal. Mm-hmm. But if you appeal, then you have to stop, to cease work and so on. Could you explain that?
Yeah, this is very new. So this is only over the last couple of hours. This is only into yesterday evening when we had this communication that if we are to, and from the Israeli military, that if we are to appeal and continue with the appeal, that we have to cease our work and stop our work temporarily, or well, not even temporarily, but while the appeal process is ongoing. We've seen this in other organizations as well. When there's been various appeals and when there's been various challenges, it's literally shut down the work of organizations. But this looks like a warning shot coming from Israel that they're looking to act on the terror designations and to completely shut us down. And this kind of bargaining, that if we stop what we're doing now, they'll allow us kind of recourse to justice and allow us access to appeal the case. This kind of condition on a legal avenue is completely unprecedented in any kind of functioning democracy. Like no other court in the world would ask people to stop working, you know, while a legal process is ongoing. It's absolutely preposterous. You couldn't make this up, you know.
You can't make this stuff up. Let me ask you, you're an international worker or an international personality in occupied Palestine. What happens to those who work for these organizations that are, you know, international personnel and so on? What, are you given a warning? You have to leave? You know, what kind of, orders that have come as a result of this designation to the personnel itself, to the international workers themselves?
So to the workers in Al-Haq, like the staff and the organizations?
Right, the staff, yeah. And in Al-Haq and I know others and so on that are, you know, that are there, you know, like yourself and so on.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the situation. Like for example, like in a slightly unrelated now situation, you had staff like this in other human rights organizations, like Omar Shakir in Human Rights Watch, who was targeted for allegedly being part of a boycott movement in his college years, and again, like his visa was revoked, and he's now working outside the occupied territory and from Amman. So there is this constant targeting of human rights workers. It's a little bit different for us. We're now operating in an organization that's a terror organization, so we're outlawed. Our work is outlawed, and we don't know what the effect of that is. Like this can have effect on our staff in relation to Jerusalem residencies. It can have effect on our staff when they're entering and exiting the territory. It can have effect, like even more directly, on just individual staff members' bank accounts. Like the Israeli, even right now, potentially the Israeli authorities can seize the funds in our bank accounts, in our personal accounts. So like this cuts right to the core, right across. And even in terms of prosecution, so even being a member of a designated terror organization, we could be prosecuted even right now for criminal prosecution, and the heads of the organizations could get very huge in terms of imprisonment of 25 years. Managers in the organizations like myself could get 15 years. Other members of the staff could get 5 years for alleged membership, and even people supplying services to the organization. So even people who were doing printing for us, even catering for different events, they could even get sentences under the counterterrorism law. So even a printer for printing for a human rights report could get a few years imprisonment. It's very sweeping, and it's absolutely completely unnecessary and disproportionate. And it is designed to, it's a terror designation, but it's designed to terrorize us, you know, and to instill fear in us. So we stop our work, we discontinue what we're doing, and we discontinue operating and supplying evidence to the International Court of the crimes that are being committed on this territory, and also that we would stop engaging with the UN Commission of Inquiry. And as we said, there's going to be a massive investigation under the UN Commission of Inquiry, looking at Israel and looking at the violations and the root causes of Israel's violations right back to the founding of the state and even beforehand. And we're looking here potentially at the UN Commission of Inquiry, looking at this whole situation as one of apartheid. And Israel doesn't want this. Israel doesn't want it moving on to the next stage of the Commission of Inquiry, making determinations that what's ongoing here is apartheid and settler colonization. And Israel, very definitely, Israel's Prime Minister and Israel's Minister of Defense and all other very senior people in the army, they certainly don't want to see indictments and international arrest warrants going out for their arrest from the International Criminal Court. And they are going to do everything in their power to silence us and prevent our work. But we will not be stopped. We will not be stopped.
Well, it's obvious why Israel is doing this. They don't want to be held accountable to all the violations, human rights violations they commit daily, every hour, every minute of every day against the Palestinian people under occupation. So we know that, but they are maybe the reason that you have been around since 1979 and now they have come around to do this. Maybe they're beginning to feel the heat, you know, maybe the international community is beginning to sort of, you know, listen or observe what has been done by this organization. I want to ask you, because, you know, many people don't know this, but these organizations in one form or another also, you know, they monitor what is going on or what is being conducted by the Palestinian Authority and so on. What kind of interaction do you have with the Palestinian Authority? What was their response to this designation?
Yeah, well, I mean, we, like, as a human rights organization, we're the least popular people, like, around, because we're monitoring and documenting violations of the Israeli authorities, but we're also monitoring and documenting the Palestinian Authority as well. You know, so when we submit shadow reports to the UN, both on the Palestinian Authority and on the Israeli authorities, but we were. And we strongly welcomed as well the huge support that came from the Palestinian Authority in relation to the designations. So the Palestinian Authority, immediately there was a statement, very strongly worded statement, which was issued from the Palestinian Authority. And there was also a meeting with President Abbas and the six organizations. So there has been very strong support and complete condemnation. And the Palestinian Authority know that for a properly functioning state, a viable state, a healthy state where there's healthy democratic processes, that you need a viable functioning civil society. You know, we're the life and breath, we're the monitoring and the watchdog of the government, and we're absolutely necessary as a necessary component of a democratic state. So this is known and this is respected by the Palestinian Authority.
My last question to you, Susan, this has been really most fascinating, but we're running out of time. What is your next step? What's next for you?
For us, our next step, I mean, we're still pushing at an advocacy level, and we want third states to really pressure Israel and the Israeli Minister of Defense to rescind the designation order. For us, this is political. Like, there's no point going through legal steps here. This was a political designation, and the resolution to this is political. So we need the political will of third states to really pressure Israel and to make it a condition to pressure Israel at every single step. You know, there can't be a viable two-state solution. There can't be any viable democratic process here without a healthy functioning civil society. And Israel has crossed red lines. So we need the international community to act on this. And we'd call on all civil society organizations to keep up their support And we're seeing very impending and serious threats coming down the line in terms of our finances being cut off and our work being completely stopped. So we need the international community to keep up the support on this and to please protect us and ensure the viability of our organizations.
You have been listening to attorney Susan Powers, Legal Advocacy Director at Palestine's powerful human rights organization, Al-Haq. As they say, the truth will out. But in this climate, with the increasing acceptance of lies and deceit as the norm, will it matter? And that is it for today. Thank you for joining us on This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and on Northern California's KKRN at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, which is 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org or KKRN.org. Please tune in again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, hoping you will get involved with the struggle to bring justice to the Palestinian people. We will talk again next week.